Local productions seen on Delta College Public Media are made possible with support from viewers like you. Thank you.
Everyone, welcome to Junior Doan's A Spark. I'm Junior Doan, and thank you for being with us. Today, my guest is Paul von Kirschbach. Paul is an international business development and strategic partnership expert. He is the founder of Seramatic. Welcome, Paul. So, Paul, you started a company called Seramatic. How come and what is the purpose?
Well, what I found over the last years was that many founders, especially tech founders, for them it's very hard to translate the technical capabilities they're having into something that is usable on the market to understand the counterpart. I always joke, and that is meant with a lot of respect. You see the extrovert that he's looking at your shoes and not at his own in the deep tech area. And meaning sometimes these people need a little bit support from a more commercial aspect to translate the vision they are having into something that a average mid-sized, large-sized company can understand and can use. So that's what Seramatic is basically about. The name comes from serendipity, market, and technology. So the is a serendipitous connection between market and technology. So that's where the whole name came from.
So what in your life prepared you? You have many degrees, but what prepared you to become this expert you are?
I think what prepared me most was seeing different areas where, on the one side, you have the business area where it's clear, okay, how do you create add value? How do you create a profit for an organization? But at the same time, then at one point also, doing a technical postmaster and understanding suddenly the complexities on the technical side, which made me, well, let's say, question a little bit the level of my degree on the commercial side, because it's so much more logic, it's so much more hardcore math driven, hardcore deep natural science driven, and you need to understand both worlds to actually develop from that a vision that can actually generate profit on a long term for a startup especially, but also for larger organizations. It's a problem to understand very often these tech founders, and I saw also larger organizations that have quite a few challenges in really understanding what drives the startup. Why are they so different than this 50, 60, 70, maybe 100-year-old company that has very strict procedures and very settled, and people are working there sometimes already their whole career. And so there are complete different mechanisms going on in both types of companies. It's not that one is better than the other. I think that only by combining both, you can truly answer new challenges on markets. And that's where I see what's also driving me then is connecting different elements. And for example, I was already at very young age. So when I was 9 years old, I was first time sent by my parents to the UK to a boarding school to learn English. And that was something like I learned intercultural contact. I learned, okay, there are people that are speaking not my mother tongue, which is German. And that then became this, grew into a connecting element where you connect different cultures, where you connect technology, market. So you basically look what is unifying and not what's dividing. And I think that is something which is very much driving me.
So when I think of German management, I think of very bureaucratic and layered. And it's a mystery somewhat how you got interested in the niche field. Do you think your exposure to English thought and possibility did it? Or am I wrong about the culture, the business culture? Maybe it's trying to change.
I would say it in that way. I think you're very right with the classically very bureaucratic way of doing business. At the same time, what drove me was on the one side this contact with internationally, so being in the UK, being in France. I'm also now no longer live in Germany because actually it was getting too bureaucratic for me, so I also changed in that sense. But it's I think what drove me that where my parents that always taught us to question authority. And that didn't make their life easier, but it made my life easier in that sense that I dared to think different and to challenge what's the standard belief that's on the market. And I see that, for example, in a project that I'm leading for one of my customers, where we are using CO2 as a building block to make base chemicals in a sustainable manner. So we are turning a problem for the globe into something where you can use it and make money out of that. So you're actually making out of the problem the solution. And this type of thinking is driven if you're allowed to think very freely. That doesn't make your life always easier inside larger organizations because they tend to say, we have a set of rules, you have to follow them, don't stick your head out. And that maybe made me also sometimes going forward and moving forward and leaving also larger organizations where if I had the impression that I couldn't thrive.
I find it unusual that your parents raised you to question authority. I don't know. I thought that was very unusual. Maybe it came out of their experience.
My parents were, in a certain way, very modern. My father came with this. His father was in the church and fighting against, actually, the Nazis, and was several times took away by the Gestapo. So he was used to stand up. At the same time, my mother was very emotional intelligent, and her family wasn't that strongly against that Nazi regime, but she was, as a person, looking for, okay, what does a young person need to thrive? And that's why I believe it's so important that people learn to dare to think different. That is something that I see in all the startups I'm collaborating, that the ability to question the status quo and to say, okay, and I have something better to do, is something that really makes the difference for all of them. And that's driving people. And that brings them into a position to actually truly drive change and help a society in a very positive way.
Elon Musk talks about basic principles. Tear everything down to the basic thing so your mind doesn't get shuttered in advance. Is that something that you do instinctively?
I probably don't know. I think it helps if you have a very clear set of values. And I learned from Stephen Covey to write down what are my values and what are my goals. And this helps you to get clarity. I try to write on a daily basis at least some thoughts and work and hone them and repeat, look, where do I make a mistake? And God, it's so beautiful to make mistakes because there are so many different mistakes you can make. The question is, how do you deal with them when you realize this is a mistake? But only by making mistakes, by daring to leave the common path, you can actually achieve something new. And this is something I see very often, that the biggest limitation are belief sets in management. If you believe this can't be true, you will not find a way to make it true. And this becomes especially critical when you're negotiating collaborations, because in these collaborations, it's not like, okay, I buy product A exactly like that, but you don't know yet if it fully will work. There might be risks in there where you say, we think we can, but can we? We have to prove it. And this type of allowing to and anticipating problems and communicating them openly is something that really allows a lot of creativity in the best sense of the word.
Do you mean personal problems, relationship problems within the organization, technical problems?
I think if you do not have them, something is wrong. You're most likely closing your eyes in front of them. So for me, it's not about being afraid of problems. It's anticipating problems or knowing in a good sense they will come, and developing also the trust in yourself to have the tools or develop the tools at that time to overcome them. And
that's
that's where it truly makes the difference. Does that make sense?
Everything makes sense to somebody, but it also makes sense to me. At a prior time, we had discussed this book, Highly Sensitive People, and I wonder what drew you to read that.
The point is, if you're thinking of highly sensitive people, very often, especially they themselves, perceive themselves as malfunctional. I'm weird, I don't like to watch violent movies, or I react to strong noises outside, very sensitive. There are so many things out there that make you feel, if you don't know that high sensitivity could be a trait you're having, that make you actually insecure. And I only learned over time, for example, to work with high sensitivity and use that to understand where the other side is coming from, while also respecting my own limits and working with that to actually come to a good result and be able to not burn out, because that's of course also a big issue if you're constantly on the go, if you're constantly flooded with new information, and you're actually actively seeking new information that contradicts your own ideas, which is, I think, also very important to do in general, to break the bubble that a Facebook and Instagram or the likes create around us, and look for the information that is contradicting our own beliefs. But that is, there's a danger with that in terms of, yeah, personal health in a certain way.
Oh. So just before we started the program, you were sharing your recent experience with some startup companies in Israel where you're an advisor. Would you mind sharing it with the audience?
Yeah, well, the beautiful thing is it's a tech startup that has developed a new generation of sensors. So these sensors can measure multiple parameters at the same time and can be integrated at a very specific points, fully polymer. So we are talking here really a deep tech project and a deep tech product. And the beautiful thing with that startup is they're, I know the guys since 2016, and only 2 years ago they asked me to join the advisory board. And that had to do with the founding of my own company. Their humbleness in working on topics and on embracing different views, different backgrounds, is also for me a impressive development I see with the whole team. It's a small company, but with about a full diverse program. So there are people from Israel, from Italy, from Russia, from Ukraine, from South America. I think there were from two countries. With really a variety of perspective, of mother tongues, of thought processes, of training backgrounds, and all them together create something truly beautiful where the market is saying, I didn't even know that this could be possible. And it all boils down in that case to the leadership that the CEO learned in the Israeli army. And I think that is also important to see the level I see as commitment to a society by a general service to a public. And that can be a military service, but it can also be a social service. But it's not about military per se. It's about knowing I serve my country in whichever way. And that is something that you can then translate into a new setting where you say, okay, I serve my company. I serve a market. And so on and so forth. And this is something which has incredible value and where also humbleness is actually the key driver and not profit. If I talk to these two founders especially, we never talk about, oh yeah, we can make an exit and we make multiple millions and we go off. That's not their motivation. The motivation is already today to find ways to support the society, but to drive also projects in, if you are doing sensors, you can easily do water management better because you suddenly can measure, for example, in desalination plants. You can measure in irrigation systems where you want to grow in very dry areas of the world. And how do you host these things already as a startup? And that's you have scarce in resources, but if you start already thinking at that time about giving back to the community, actually something which I like very much about the US, where the willingness to giving back to the community is, I think, much bigger and stronger than I see it, for example, in Europe. So these are things that really are impressive to see how much influence already a founder can have on that mindset of a startup.
Some few years ago, I read Startup Nation, which is a book that tries to explain why there are so many startups in Israel, that startups have become successful. And if I took away the right message, it's because they were given so much responsibility during those service years in the military. They were just, they're their guys, you know, trying to protect the country. And they were responsible for decision making. What I liked about our conversation just now, I didn't take from the book, and maybe I missed it or was unaware, but the idea that they have this sense of, well, first of all, you have to get along. And secondly, you have to get the project done, right, for the military. And third, or the company. And thirdly, I think there's a, if we don't do it, who will? that helps their energy level. Maybe I don't, I'm sort of little, not saying it just the way I could, but I just thought it was very impressive. I know some startup people here and who weren't in the military particularly, you know, they're interested in this, that, and the other. And I haven't noticed some of the things you mentioned. Maybe we had them in bygone times, but we need to refine them. I do agree that Europe doesn't believes the government's going to do everything, and we don't subscribe to that at all. You know, if you have a good idea, build it, but don't replicate. So, yeah. Now, you're very interested in sustainability. Has your Israel ties or involvement changed that in any way?
Yes and no. I think the element of sustainability is, and that's very often not known. If you talk about and look into the history of sustainability, there is, for example, a book published in 1713. So that is more than 200 years ago, almost 300 now, or even more than 300. And you look at, they had a problem with cutting down too much trees. So they started planting trees in a, at that time, new manner, by just really building up the forestation to get again woods in that area, which was Saxonia in Germany. What people forget, that wasn't about a good deed. It had a very critical impact on competitiveness of the country. So the alternative would have been to import wood from Austria and Northern Italy at the time, which would have put the region into a competitive disadvantage. This in itself is critical to understand that part of sustainability needs to be competitiveness, also in price. And I'm very, very careful when I see business models that talk about green premiums, for example. Not that at a beginning stage you can do that, but you need to have a perspective to be at least on par with, let's say, non-sustainable, whatever that means, because also there's a lot of greenwashing in there. But you need to be, to find a way to outcompete. That doesn't relieve the oil industry, especially from, we need to think of how we we come to a true cost of ownership for oil, because at the moment the oil price is also at a level which is not reflecting the risks for overall society. There are good mechanisms out there that are in discussions, and we need to only time will tell which one is the right one. But I believe if you in all sustainability discussions we are seeing, if you talk about, oh yeah, we can ask always a green premium.
I want to interrupt, Paul. Listen to me.
Yes.
We're running out of time, and I don't want to miss the opportunity to have you say a few words of developing or having trust in leaders, how they develop, how they live it, and why is it important?
Yeah, I think on the trust level, that is a very important. There are several levels of trust, especially if you talk about international business.
Hello, I'm Julia Doan. You have just been watching an interesting interview I had with strategic partnership expert Paul von Kirchbach. Due to the number of topics covered during this interview, I have decided to create a two-part series. To watch part two, you can visit my website, juniadoan.com, and search for Paul von Kirchbach, or continue viewing next week. Thank you for watching this program. I hope you enjoyed it.
To contact Junia, send her an email at juniadoanthespark@gmail.com. For more information, program schedules, and news about future guests, go to www.juniadoanthespark.com. Thank you for joining us. See you next time on Junia Doan's The Spark.
Local productions seen on Delta College Public Media are made possible with support from viewers like you. Thank you.